Hello and welcome back to Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons. Awards, awards, awards. We've had the London Critics Circle Film Awards, the BAFTAs. Before that, there was Sundance and the Golden Globes, while Berlin bubbled in the background. Is it all just a preamble to the Oscars in 2 weeks? What on earth are awards for? We talked to Simon Chin, producer of the award-winning Man on Wire, to find out. And it may be only 5 years old, but the Glasgow Film Festival kicks off this week. I'll be talking to festival director Alison Gardner about what's in store up there. And Zan Brooks is back to talk awards and review Notorious about B.I.G., Nuri Bilgelen's Three Monkeys, and Spanish thriller King of the Hill. Yes, this is hotter than an East Coast, West Coast hip-hop feud. It's Film Weekly. You could be forgiven for thinking that all the film industry does is hand itself awards. From Sundance, to the Oscars, to the Golden Globes and the London Film Critics Circle, and then all the way forward to Cannes, with the BAFTAs announced last week, it's gongs, gongs and more gongs. We know who the winners are, but what on earth do they really win? Our esteemed colleague Zan Brooks wrote a blog this week decrying the onslaught of awards and their predictable outcome. I'll be talking to Zan a bit later about whether it's all become too boring. But first, I'm joined on the line by a friend of Film Weekly, an award winner and the producer of one of the best British films of recent years, Man on Wire, Simon Chin. Simon, on Sunday night at the BAFTAs, won the Alexander Korda Award for Outstanding British Film. So, how did it feel?
That's a complete shock. We were up against Slumdog Millionaire, Hunger and In Bruges. And I mean, just the competition was obviously so fierce that we didn't think our little documentary would get a look in. But it's incredibly, it's a complete thrill, I have to say. And it's great for the film.
It's also, you know, it means something because this is, you were nominated as well for the Carl Foreman Award for the Outstanding Achievement on a First Film as well. So this is your first film and it wins a BAFTA for Best British Film. I mean, it's easy,
well,
this film game.
I'm not a total novice. I've done a lot of TV films. But yeah, this is my first feature film. And it was a huge honour to be nominated for the Carl Foreman. Actually, it went to Steve McQueen for Hunger, and he was a very worthy winner. It was an astonishing debut for him. I actually thought when the Carl Foreman was over, I thought, well, I can really relax now. I can enjoy the evening. But it wasn't to be, actually.
Ironically, I think the last documentary to do so well was probably Touching the Void.
Yeah, that actually also won the Alexander Korda Award. So we're in very illustrious company.
And you're also, I gather, you're about to re-release Man on Wire theatrically, because at the moment you stand, I think, if I'm right in saying, on £880,000 that you've got theatrically. With a re-release and with this BAFTA, you might then go on to top a million in the theatres. And then you're only second behind the highest grossing British documentary of all time, which is Touching the Void.
Yeah, no, well, I don't know the numbers quite, but I know that we're at number 11, and I guess just behind An Inconvenient Truth, which is another great Oscar winning doc. And I guess the re-release might push us into the top 10 slot and beyond, perhaps, as you
that's
say.
That's in all-time documentaries in the UK. Wow, that's impressive. Because, well, yes, as you say, you're off to the Oscars. There I go, talking about the rainy night in the Royal Opera House. But you're off to the Oscars.
Yeah, no, it's completely extraordinary. Getting my dinner suit all brushed off and slightly taken out. Heading off there on Tuesday, which is extremely exciting.
And you're taking your wife?
Yeah, I'm taking
your
wife,
child,
baby.
Brilliant. I mean, this is. I don't suppose it's the stuff. I suppose it is the stuff you dream of, but it's not the stuff that you dream won't ever come true.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the film's sort of achievements, I guess, have surpassed our wildest expectations, and it's terrifying, to be honest, but it's thrilling at the same time, and you know, to sort of. To be going to the Oscars, you know, and to be competing for an Oscar is quite surreal.
And you collaborated with James Marsh, and I was lucky enough to hang out with you and him at the BAFTAs. I must just say to anyone who's listening, it's great when you're not sure you're going to get into one, a little party, and we went up to, I don't know which party it was, I think it was Working Title or something,
Pathé,
and we were with James, and we were like, oh, are we going to get in here? And James just holds up that little BAFTA trophy, the little face, and you just walk straight through the door.
Yeah,
it's
amazing the access that those sort of give you. They're very, very heavy as well.
Aren't they heavy? But James Marsh, a terrific documentary maker, has been for ages, a great filmmaker. Are you going to work with him again?
Yeah, James and I are cooking up the next documentary feature. We've got a story based on a book that I've optioned, but I can't say too much about it yet because it's sort of delicate stage of negotiations with financiers and what have you. But I will be announcing it soon. It's a fantastic story, and James, we've been talking for about 8 months about a whole range of different stories, and this was the one that kind of rose to the surface and was the kind of obvious one to do next.
And so, can I say, well, apart from getting you into parties, a BAFTA, and then hopefully, let's fingers crossed, an Oscar, because we're talking about awards and do they matter. I presume that when you're armed with those sort of garlands, it helps with getting those finances together for the next one.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing. I mean, really, you know, it really helps with work, basically. And that's the thing to do, is not to get too sort of swept up in. It's wonderful, the kind of the glory is, you know, don't get me wrong, it's very enjoyable, but the key thing, I think, is just kind of roll your sleeves up and use them for what they're really useful for, which is, as you say, you know, getting the next project off the ground, and yes, definitely, it's helping. It's oiling the wheels.
Did anyone come up to you like a hero of the film world and say, "Man, I loved your movie. Great job."
Yeah, we had quite a few of those. They all sort of end up being is a bit of a blur. Actually, I'm going to take a camera to the Oscars. And get some pictures.
Go and get some pictures of someone coming, like Jack Nicholson saying, "I love you."
Well, in fact, actually, I think the Observer are actually commissioning us to take some snaps.
We are, absolutely. Yeah, so you'll do that for us.
Yeah.
And so you and Jack Nicholson in a jacuzzi. That's what I'm looking for, Simon.
Can't wait.
And do come back. Best of luck for the Oscars, and do come back onto Film Weekly and tell us about it orally as well as visually. And we know we wish you so much luck because we've supported the film basically since we've heard about it.
And thank you so much for your support, Jason. You've been absolutely brilliant.
It's been my pleasure. Simon Chin, producer of Man on Wire, congratulations again.
Cheers, Jason. Bye.
Indeed, we wish them the best of luck at the Oscars, and a joyous thing to be able to say that Man on Wire gets a theatrical re-release across the UK from this Friday the 13th. We hope that is a good luck day for the Man on Wire team. Simon Chin, the producer of Man on Wire, for him, awards are obviously a very good thing. Sam Brooks joins me now in the pod, the man who wrote the blog this week to say that, aren't the Oscars getting a bit boring after the BAFTA? So, Zan, is there any point to awards?
Well, it remains to be seen, doesn't it? I mean, it's all to play for in the Oscars, and I think that if the Oscars are just like what we've seen at the Globes and the BAFTAs, then I'm wondering what the point of them is.
Because did you think the BAFTAs have stolen their thunder? Because I thought the BAFTAs were good, but do I need to see them again in 2 weeks?
Well, this is the thing, yeah. I mean, the only thing that's going to be different is the dresses that they're wearing, isn't it? I mean, the speeches are going to be the same, the actual awards are going to be the same. And it's always been that the Globes and the BAFTAs are in that sort of slight double-edged compliment. They're kind of seen as an Oscar warm-up act, and they give clues to maybe what's going to win at the Oscars. And here they're in such harmony that it actually risks making the Oscars look like the kind of warm through leftovers.
Like the BAFTAs used to be.
Yeah, which I think would be quite a damaging thing for the Academy as a whole if that does happen.
So do you think that, I think what's happening recently is that the last minute Oscar voters have got their pens poised. They think, well, what are the BAFTAs going to do? Let's do something different.
I kind of hope that they do.
But that would mean that Slumdog Millionaire wouldn't win.
Well,
which would make you the most miserable man in Britain.
Well, look, all right, there's this argument that says, you know, shouldn't it just be the best films and the best actors that win? That's the real point of this. As if it's a kind of, it's a charged area to argue that this is reflective of the best of world cinema that's at the Oscars.
Absolutely.
And the BAFTAs and the Globes. It's probably not. Therefore, I think that there are other films there and there are other actors who have been nominated who are possibly just as deserving.
Zan, let's move on to this week's film releases, none of which will be troubling any award academies, it must be said. We're going to look at Notorious, which is about Biggie Smalls, or B.I.G., as he's known to you and me. Nuri Bilge Ceylan, the Notorious NBC from Turkey, his film Three Monkeys, and the Spanish thriller Rey de la Montaña, or to you and me, King of the Hill. Let's start with Notorious, which is the biopic of Christopher Wallace, aka Notorious B.I.G., aka Biggie Smalls, aka a rapper who was killed in the East Coast, West Coast rap hip-hop feud. Let's have a listen to Notorious.
I pray all this East Coast, West Coast mess is over now. I saw his mother on TV. She's a strong woman. But no parent should have to bury their child.
I just always figured we had time to straighten things out. You don't think this had anything to do with your argument?
No.
Well, nobody is invincible, son. That's why we have to make everything we do now count.
That was strong mother Angela Bassett talking to her naughty little boy, rather big, in fact, Christopher Wallace, aka Biggie Smalls, in Notorious. Zan, are you a hip-hop fan?
I'm just waiting for you to say ACCA a few more times.
I'm all with acronyms this week. I'm like B-I-G, A-K-A, R-S-V-P, see vous play.
I'm not really a big fan of rap, but I quite like the rap that is showcased in this film. I think that I can kind of see why he was successful and what was good about him. And this film, I thought, was a sort of, on one level, it was a fascinating insight into the 90s rap scene and what made it tick and how it worked and how it kind of found room for these kind of diverse group of people that you had, you know, R&B singers who started out in the kind of Baptist choir and drug dealers and Little Kim who works, you know, behind the counter in a department store. And it had that kind of grassroots vitality.
Yeah, I'm glad
and it
you liked that,
that very well.
I appreciated that bit. And it was all from the streets of Fulton, from Brooklyn, from Bed-Stuy, BK Represent. And I liked all that.
Yeah.
And I thought that caught it. And it's quite difficult to do.
Well.
They looked like they could sing these.
Absolutely.
These, and
they
were very good
matches.
I
mean, the Jamal Woolard, who plays the adult Biggie, is a Brooklyn rapper himself. And you can tell. I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing. And he's a sort of great showman, as I guess Biggie was himself.
Yeah, and the girl who plays Lil' Kim.
Yeah.
She was really good as well. And the girl who played Featherstone, they were pretty good lookalikes for
people
as well. And they got the sexiness of it and the kind of, I suppose, the morality of it, right? But that's probably where I thought the film slightly fell down, because it was a bit of a hagiography about Notorious B.I.G., where clearly he wasn't the nicest bloke in the world.
But also, the problem for me with this film was when it should have been getting really good, it was good, and when it should have been sort of verging on the great, it copped out. And I think there are kind of key reasons why it cops out. It's leading up to the murder of Tupac Shakur and Biggie Smalls, which is something that has remained unexplained. Nobody's ever been charged with these murders. It's an area that was explored in the Nick Broomfield documentary Biggie and Tupac, which kind of hints that it was the result of a kind of East-West feud with Suge Knight, the boss of Death Row Records over in L.A., maybe ordering the murder of Biggie Smalls and then the LAPD covering it up.
Only a suggestion, mind you.
Only a suggestion. It was sort of a hypothesis. I wanted to know what this film thought of that, and it doesn't give anything away at all.
It was funny at the end because it says executive produced by Sean Puffy
Well, this is
Coombs.
The problem. It's executive produced by Sean Coombs, who was kind of implicated perhaps in the earlier attack on Tupac Shakur, and the film sort of goes at great pains to say, of course, you know, he had nothing to do with that because he's a wonderful bloke. He's wonderful. Look, he'd never do
Look
nothing
at him.
Like that.
Look at the clothes
he
wears.
Like, he looks like an angel. He's
Doesn't
got like
he?
His white chinchilla
Although I love the line
and
that Angela Bassett says, what kind of grown man calls himself Puffy?
And it's also co-produced by Christopher Wallace's former managers. So these are people who, as well as being kind of close friends of the subject, are also witnesses and possible suspects in a crime. So they're maybe not the most reliable people to tell you exactly what happened.
That bit's like, wow, they might as well
nothing
have
nothing happened. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's the equivalent of that. They're basically saying, look at him. He's had a marvellous life. Look at his marvellous life. Forget about the death. You know, nothing to see here, folks. Look the other way. Other way, quick.
They did deal with the drug dealing and
they did all that.
That was bad.
And his womanising and the fact that he was, yeah, you're right, a fairly pathetic character at times.
Which I thought was difficult, but he kind of lovable because he was big and fat and he had this kind of lovely face that he could make people laugh because he was cute and whatever. And he was a damn good rapper as well. And he brought soul back to it. I love that M2 made Juicy Fruit sample that was kind of put
all that sounded great.
And actually, I thought they captured rap clubs quite well, rap gigs, where they were, especially there was one at the first gig where they went
in Harlem, where he stages the fight on stage.
Really good.
And all the people in the audience are getting kind of panicked and around to kind of bolt because they think this is turning ugly, and then they realise that it's all part of the act and they're all completely kind of won over, and that was done brilliantly.
Yes, I thought so too. Well done for us for being on the streets, because I think some of our older critical colleagues were a bit baffled by the whole thing.
No, they thought it was a film about Christmas rapping, I think, some of them.
So that's a Notorious, which is kind of okay, and I thought very good performances by Anthony Mackie as Tupac on his career, and Derek Luke as Sean
as
Puffy Coombs.
Puffy Coombs
as well. Very two good African-American actors there. Notorious. Let's move on to a film which might have troubled a jury. It was the Cannes jury last year, who are notorious fans of Nuri Bilge Ceylan, Turkish auteur, the man behind Climates and Utsak, or Distance. His latest film is called Three Monkeys. It tells the story of a man who goes to prison, taking the rap for his boss, and then his son, who has a revenge killing. It's all set in Istanbul, and it's all very, very murky. Turkish delight, Zach?
Reasonably so, yes. It's different from Bilge Ceylan's previous work, this, isn't it?
It is slightly, but it's almost a thriller.
It's almost a thriller.
Without many thrills.
It's a very sort of Turkish thriller, isn't it? I mean, it's very sombre. But it's less sombre than his previous two films, which are kind of these sort of simmering kind of ambient mood pieces.
This being Three Monkeys is more simian.
This is more simian, yeah. And the Three Monkeys, obviously, the hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil.
Yes, and that's because it's the father, the mother, and the son, and she has an affair. He takes the rat. The son may or may not do a murder. I didn't really know what this film was about, to be honest with you. I've seen it twice now, and people really love the old Turkish auteur here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'm a big fan. There's always someone surly bloke ripping the clothes off a large-breasted woman in his films, which says more
about... There was Notorious, and you like that.
Yes, but yes, you're right. you got me bang to rights.
I kind of agree. Also, are we spotting a little bit of a trend here of these kind of simmering mood piece auteurs trying to do thrillers? Because we had the Dardenne brothers doing The Silence of Lorna a couple of months
ago. And we had Bill Attar trying to do The Man from London.
Yeah, exactly.
So they sort of go, I'm an art house director, so what I shall do is do a thriller, but with no thrills.
Yeah, they
and you're going, that's just boring.
But what do they want? Do they want to go over to Hollywood and make a film with kind of Bruce Willis or something secretly?
I think so, because there's a lot of vest work in Three Monkeys, so there's definitely a part for Bruce Willis
as a Turkish man. There is. I didn't dislike this. I thought that it was a little bit over-decorated in a way. It was a bit too intricate and a bit too high concept, and it didn't quite gel with the sort of the dour, gloomy mood
of it.
There's
a lot of people staring out of windows, looking at lighthouses or boats in the harbour or winds like wafting through trees. I know I'm supposed to like this stuff because it's art housey stuff, but sometimes you just got to say, it's not doing it for me.
It probably didn't do it for me. I quite like the sort of the circular nature of it. I like the fact that it's almost, is it the monkey's paw that you have to sort of pass on to somebody else, like a sort of an evil baton?
Well, see, that's what I thought that was. Rather, it's more that because
it's
it,
more
they
that.
Do, then they
He's
do.
Mixing
they
his monkey metaphors,
I
isn't
think
he?
He certainly is. We don't want to be like you.
And also, you know, you talk about the elderly critics not knowing what Notorious is. If you put monkeys in a title, you expect a bit of comedy, don't you?
I do. So that is Nuri Bilge Ceylan's latest film, Three Monkeys. Now, Spanish thriller King of the Hill or Rey de la Montaña. I'd just like to say that again. Rey de la Montaña.
You say Acker again.
No, I'm done with
Acker.
But
it is. It's Acker, King of the Hill.
Oh, it is. You're right. Rey de la Montaña, Acker, King of the Hill.
Marvellous.
Muchas gracias. A man is driving at a petrol station. He meets a girl. She robs him and then he's lost in the mountains in Spain outside Madrid, somewhere in Burgos, actually. Zan, does this work? A Spanish thriller?
Yeah, this works. I like this a lot. This shows that it's not just the American backwoods that are home to sort of feral hunters who will shoot outsiders as soon as look at them. I think this gets a little bit odd towards the end, but I think it plays like a sort of existential nightmare for a while.
It reminded me of Steven Spielberg's first film, Duel.
It did, yes, and a little bit of Deliverance thrown in there too.
Absolutely, because you're in the backwoods and we don't quite know who's shooting at this bloke.
And you don't know who you can trust, and there's definitely that sense that this is a sort of a city man who's blundered out of his depth and is seen as an outsider, both by the people who are trying to kill him, but also by the authorities, the kind of the local Garda who kind of drive in and are instantly suspicious of him because he's not from those parts.
Absolutely, and he doesn't quite know what to do running around. It reminded me also of another Spanish film which had a lot of running through woods called Intacto.
Yeah.
Which was set on, I think, Tenerife.
But the actor actually was in Intacto.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah,
I should do my more research than just relying on my Rolodex of mental film images.
But it has the same quality, I think, to it.
And he was suitably sweaty and kind of haggard and worried and beardy.
Yes, he was. And also a little bit untrustworthy as well. I mean, it's a proper everyman character that he's kind of cowardly a lot of the time. And he makes one very kind of fateful decision that really did take me by surprise.
Yeah, and I was like, well, is that right? I hate you. So I thought in a very pared down way, because it really is just a bloke and a woman and a couple of other people, but very, very pared down.
That's when it's at its best, though. And the director, you know, knows to basically keep the camera kind of tight on the quarries, on the victims, and leave their attackers very kind of shadowy. So you're really not sure where they are or who they are. Eventually, we find out who they are, and that is interesting too. But then we have a kind of a long last scene that didn't quite work for me. It felt a bit pretentious.
And I didn't quite know what that meant. If that was supposed to kind of say, well, you know, existence is bleak, if this was a metaphor for human race, as quarry films.
Yeah, we're all cast into the inferno. We're all, you know, what has the world come to? I think that's what we were supposed to take from this. But that felt a bit pretentious to me.
But still, nevertheless, worth watching.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was a really neat, expert, nasty, tense thriller.
Zan Brooks, thank you so much for your reviews this week. You can, of course, keep up to date with all Zan's blogging and controversial opinions on guardian.co.uk/film. You're listening to Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomon. Now, it may be only 5 years old and living somewhat in the shadow of its towering veteran neighbour, the Edinburgh Film Festival, but this weekend sees the Glasgow Film Festival biting back. I spoke to festival co-director Alison Gardner to find out what was in store for those heading to Glasgow for the festival.
We're trying to present the best of all cinema from across the world, if possible, to the people of Scotland and the UK, because we now have lots and lots of visitors coming to Glasgow. We have about 15 different strands. We have a retrospective this year of Audrey Hepburn. She would have been 80 this year.
Wow. She's not coming. She can't come, unfortunately.
Unfortunately not. Although we have spoken to her son.
Yes.
And there's lots of interesting bits about her, less apart from the Holly Golightly angle, where she's very well known. We're also showing two of her more known works, The Unforgiven, also The Children's Hour with Shirley MacLaine.
Wow, I don't know those two, it has to be said.
Yeah, where she plays a teacher, and her and Shirley are accused of being lesbians because they are very close in the school, and it's a sort of whispering campaign. It's a really great film to watch.
Yeah, it's a really nice idea in Audrey Hepburn season. I imagine you'll get loads of Audrey-alikes coming along.
Yes, but there's lots of young people, 13-year-old girls, who are saying she's so stylish, she's so fantastic, we've never seen it on the big screen. This is a great experience for us. They're talking because they bought their tickets, and there's a big excitement amongst young people, and for me that's a big plus, because essentially we're introducing them to classic movies but on the big screen.
Right, well, you've also got a few new movies as well, haven't
we
you?
We have, yes. We've got our European cinema. There's lots of fantastic movies there, some tough ones, Perfect Day. We've got Blue Eyelids, part of our Mexican season. We've got Cape Number 7 as part of our world season.
Wow, I haven't even seen these films.
We've seen them at various festivals,
yeah.
And they're just really meaty, strong world films.
Right, well, what about local scene? What about the Scottish scene? Do you feel behoven to actually kind of showcase local Scottish work?
We do showcase a lot of work, but we don't feel obliged to, unless it's good, it doesn't get in.
Right. So is there a strong element this year?
There is, yes. We have Bill Paterson coming up to do a talk about his life in film, and we're doing 25 years because Comfort and Joy.
Brilliant.
Then we're starting backwards, if you like. We're showing a rare print of The Divine Lady by Frank Lloyd, the first Scotsman to win an Oscar from 1929. And then we're moving far forward, if you like, to brand new films. We're showing Newtown Killers.
Oh, Richard Jobson's film.
Richard Jobson's coming, James Pearson, the actor, and Dougray Scott are coming as well.
And just tell us about the films that I suppose bookend the festival, that kind of define it in a way, because you've got a great opening night film.
Well, In the Loop is absolutely hilarious. It's so rude and funny. I absolutely laugh.
And yours is the UK premiere, isn't it?
It is. It's a European premiere. It's world premiere with Sundance, and then we're straight into Glasgow Film Festival.
Now, is this because Armando Iannucci, its writer-director, is a local boy?
Well, we hoped that would be the lure. And it proved to be, I think he's really proud to be coming back to present it to the people of Glasgow. I mean, he's very fond of Glasgow, and we're just delighted that he's going to come along and introduce it along with some of the members of the cast and crew. In fact, quite a great deal of them, apparently.
Absolutely. Well, it should be brilliant. We featured him on Film Weekly just before he went to Sundance, so we feel kind of chasing his coattails all the way up to Glasgow, and then we'll be following him to Dublin as well. And just tell us about your closing night film as well, because that's made by a couple of friends of mine, actually.
Ah, Last Chance Harvey.
Yes.
It's a really lovely romance. It's a lovely way to sort of dovetail the festival, if you like. We're starting with In the Loop, which is fairly meaty, and as you know, the script is quite strong. And then we're finishing with this, I would say, realistic romance. It feels nice. Characters are really well drawn. Emma Thompson is really great in it. Dustin Hoffman is a revelation, and it's a really nice way to end the festival on that high note.
Absolutely, and it's kind of produced and directed by a couple of former BAFTA winners who won
and who are coming over to introduce it for
Nicola Osborne and Joel Hopkins.
They are, yes, and we're delighted to welcome them here.
Brilliant. Well, I wish you the best of luck with it in Glasgow. It sounds like a very exciting enterprise, and I wish you the best of luck for continuing. May you live as long as Edinburgh, which is the world's longest.
Well, absolutely.
Running film.
I used to work at Edinburgh, so they're a great festival as well to work with. I love Edinburgh.
Absolutely. Well, best of luck, Alison. Thanks very much for joining
us on
Film
Weekly. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Our Film Weekly thanks and best of luck to Alison Gardner. For more information on the festival, go to glasgowfilmfestival.org.uk. Thanks, of course, to my other guests this week, Simon Chin, producer of Man on Wire, and Zan Brooks as ever. Film Weekly is off to the Dublin Film Festival this weekend, so if you're planning to be there, do come and say hi. Make sure you pick up a copy of this week's Observer to read my BAFTA trailer trash column and to get the best film news and reviews as ever. But for now, from Film Weekly and me, Jason Solomons, and my producer, Jason Phipps, it's goodbye.
Wipe the cold out my eyes. See who's this page of me and why. It's my nigga Pop from the barbershop. Call me.